On this episode, I interview Reese Brett Bowen, Google engineer, about using AngularJS to build applications for Google. This is Frontend Developer Cast, Episode 4. Welcome to the Frontend Developer Cast, the podcast that helps developers be awesome at building ambitious web applications. Whether you're a JavaScript ninja or you're just getting started, I'm your host, Craig McKeachy. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the fourth episode of the podcast. I'm working today on getting my processes down for the podcast, as well as hiring some help editing the podcast and getting it live on the site every 2 weeks, so I'll be able to more easily keep bringing you more great interviews. I'm also getting help designing and setting up a page to sell my book on mastering single-page applications. The book, right now, I'm finishing the last couple chapters, editing and working through some Ember.js code samples. I'm hoping to make the book available for pre-sale at a 20% discount in the next few weeks. If you have any interest or you just want some more great free content, go to my blog at funnyant.com, that's funnyant.com, and sign up for my free 7-day e-course, The JavaScript MVC Comparison, and you'll get notified when the book launches. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do so by going to the iTunes store on your phone or desktop, then searching for Frontend or via RSS by going to frontendcast.com. We are also available on Stitcher. If you've already subscribed, then take the time to leave a review in iTunes. This is the best way for other people to find out about the show. Today's interview is Reese Brett Bowen, who is a Google engineer currently using AngularJS to build applications for Google. We discuss his experiences, good and bad, with AngularJS and talk about details of the Google technology stack for the project, which I found fascinating. In particular, they're using ProtoBuf, which is short for Protocol Buffers, Google's data interchange format, and the Clojure compiler. Here's the interview.
Hi, I've got Reese Brett Bowen with me today. He's a Google engineer at Google in their New York office, and he's been working with Angular on the most recent project. And we're going to talk through his experience with that, as well as some of the other tools they use at Google in the JavaScript and front-end web development space. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. So tell me about the app you're currently working on. You know, maybe not from a technical standpoint at first, but what does the app do, so the end users have a feel of the UI, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So I'm working on the Bid Manager team, and it's what we're currently working on is the reporting page. So at the moment, it's actually a GWT app, so it's all done in Java, and that gets compiled down to JavaScript. But what they're doing now is, and in a lot of places in Google, they're looking at trying to move things over to using Angular. So we're looking at changing just the reporting section at first to use Angular. And that's what we're doing. It's basically just a list of reports that you can run, different types of metrics and filters and things that you can choose on the report to run.
Is this Google AdWords that you'd be working on?
Something called Bid Manager. So
okay.
It does dynamic bidding of prices at when the ads go out.
Okay. So that's very interesting. So which version of Angular are you guys building this app with?
It's the latest, so it's 1.2.
Okay. So you're on the latest. Was there any browser considerations when you guys made that decision in terms of supporting, you know, versions of IE or not supporting that sort of thing?
I think they're fairly progressive at dropping IE8, so I don't think you can really choose Angular 1.2 and think, yeah, we're going to go that back. Traditionally, Google does kind of like to encompass as many browsers, but because it's not out there for the greater internet to use, it's there for specific clients. We don't have to worry too much about which browser. IE8 or the older browsers.
Okay, so version 1.2 does not support IE 8 and back, is that correct?
I don't believe it does, or at least they're dropping it soon.
I've definitely heard that. I was trying to remember if that's 1.2 or the version after that, whatever they're going after that. So, But I'll look that up and put it in the show notes for our listeners. So there. Can you give me an idea of how long you've been working on the app and, you know, whether it's in production or whether you guys are still working on it, that sort of thing?
So I've been there for a couple of months now, so I've only been working on it for 2 months, and basically taken it from nothing to where it is. So it's not in production. It's getting close to a point where we can at least start putting it out into beta users. So a lot of the time we've been spent on it is actually figuring out how to use Angular going forward for people. So whether or not for the other developers who are going to come in, and as we go on, what are the best practices to use, how we should set up the app, all that sort of stuff.
Okay, Okay. So you're sort of setting up a framework for the framework, right?
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
So what other dependencies and libraries and so forth are you using on the project?
Yeah, so we're working with Clojure Tools, which has a compiler. So we have to make it so that it works with the compiler. And the compiler does some things like renaming of variables and so on. So at places you have to make sure things like when you put keys in objects, they're strings if they're going to be exported to the template. Think about an Angular application is that all your logic and all your code isn't exactly in JS files. A lot of them can be in templates. So if you want your template to be able to access a property that's there, you have to be aware of whether or not that property name is going to be is still going to be there, is it going to be compiled away? So you have to figure out which of those properties you want to export so that you can keep that in line.
So it compiles away the it compiles the templates as well. I didn't realize that Clojure does.
Oh no, it doesn't compile a template. That's the problem. Okay. it's not that good yet. They've done a lot of things around like the dependency injection. Because before, when you have dependency injection, Angular does a thing where it looks at the function.to string to find out what the actual classes it should inject into the services and so on that they have. So that name can get changed when you run it through a compiler.
Right.
So then that does not match to the string that you've got anymore. So they've done things where you can have, well, the compiler can look at things like annotations that you put on comments before functions. And so it looks for the special annotations called ng-inject, and that just tells the compiler, oh, wait a second, we actually want to inject this. This is what Angular is going to be injecting into, so don't rename these certain properties.
So it's mostly things, either properties or things being passed on in the constructor as dependencies, and you don't want to rename them because then the code would break, basically, that point.
Yeah, I mean, any variables that you're just using inside a function, that's fine to rename. And the problem is when you're sharing things like objects or properties or anything across functions or across files, then if it gets renamed, you're going to have a problem because they might get renamed in two different things, or maybe one does not get compiled, so then it's expecting the original name and it didn't compile that. Clojure actually does a great job of renaming things, even when they're across files. But that only really works if it has all the code to look through, because it goes through, it actually parses all your JavaScript and figures out what things are being passed away, so it knows to keep the names the same. Fortunately, with things like Angular, it can't parse the templates, so you can't tell what things you're going to be using in the template, so it doesn't know not to rename those. So you've got to tell it not to.
Interesting. Does that make for some noise in the code that I, at least I personally wouldn't appreciate? I don't know are you just kind of used to it and it's not a big deal?
I've been using Clojure for a while now, so I'm kind of used to it, although when I originally used it, it was just in one giant application, so you don't have to worry about the rename. Usually it'll just all work. As long as you give it all the code, it will work. The problem is, it's not too bad. All it means is that whenever you are defining things that are going to be in the template, there's a certain comment that you put on just saying export,
right?
Which just says this is going to be an exported property, don't rename it.
Right.
And as I said before, it's the ng-inject one. And as long as you've got those two in there, it fixes everything.
Okay.
And these annotations that are going in, if you're doing things with Clojure, you kind of want them in there anyway, because the annotations, you can also put things like type information against. So when you do your compile checks, it'll actually check things like types across files and so on. So you know, it can catch a lot of errors that way. So while you're doing it, you just chuck on an export saying, oh, it's a type of this, and I also want this to be available to the template.
Okay, that's helpful. I think for some people, the concept of a JavaScript compiler is a new concept. You know, I think I'm maybe oversimplifying when I think about it as sort of minification and combining, but it's not just that. It's more complex. The Clojure one is more complex than that, right? It is all about sort of making the code small and tight, but it's doing a lot more elaborate things, correct?
Yeah, is that, and I mean, it can increase performance by figuring out where things go. It even knows stuff a little bit about gzip, so it will not only try and make the code smaller, it'll make it smaller for when you gzip it up. It does things like check types and so on information for you. So if you're working in a team, you know what type of types are going into functions. It'll throw out errors saying you've created a new function and it doesn't work with the types that you're given. It does a lot of things, and at first it seems a bit scary, but
right.
Once you get the hang of it, it actually helps speed up. Because a lot of problems you come up against JavaScript, you only find at runtime. So it'll find those for you. I mean, if you're passing the wrong type, it's not going to throw an error in JavaScript until you run it. And even then, it may not throw an error, because you can have type coercion and so on. So if you try and say just console log something or print something to a screen, you might be passing an object instead of a string.
Uh-huh.
And you wouldn't know that. It'll print that an object happily enough for you. It's just going to have curly braces and you're going to think, why is that there? You know, these kind of things can go into the program. They can be deep and they can be hard to find.
So this is more the linting part of the compiler, correct? Or well, am I overstating?
Linting's more just kind of how the code looks. It's not the actual types and the things you pass through. So it gives you type chain, which you get from a lot of strongly typed languages like Java and so on. You know, we actually define the types. It's kind of like that. It's kind of like TypeScript, where you can actually put types and things, and it will throw errors if you put the wrong type in the wrong place.
Okay. Yeah. Like I said, I think that helps. Any UI libraries, or do you guys stay away from that stuff on the project? For the animations, you mentioned it's some reporting, D3 or anything like that?
What we're doing is just currently creating the reports. We haven't done anything that actually displays the reports. Most of the reports that come out are in CSV format, so we can kind of send that straight to them, because a lot of advertisers, they like to work with their with Excel, so we just kind of give them that. There will be something coming up with visualizations and so on, and we'll definitely be looking at D3 to do that.
Okay. How much testing are you guys doing on the project so far, and what's the testing story, both end-to-end and unit?
Well, at the moment, we're putting everything under unit testing, so everything we're creating, we're making tests around. End-to-end testing is something we haven't started yet. We're looking at probably trying to use Protractor for that. We haven't... because it's at Google, there's also other Google technologies, and it's a bit strange how it's run and how it's built, so we've got to find out exactly. It's a little bit more fiddly to get it set up there, because everything at Google, they try and do at scale, so everything's a little bit more fiddly to set up, but once you do it, it'll run forever. So we've got to do a bit more research into that and figure out how we're going to actually run it.
So why not, it's Google, why not Karma and the formerly known as Testacular? Why?
Oh, we do use those to run unit tests, but end-to-end tests, I think, end-to-end tests and integration tests, there's a different beast altogether.
Okay. So what was the process? Were you on the project at a time when the technology was chosen? And if so, you know, what was the process for choosing Angular versus, you know, other MVEs, C frameworks, other frameworks?
Actually, no, I don't think I've ever been on a project which gets to choose a technology. I kind of usually get called in at a time when people want to fix it up. It's like, it's not working for us, can you help now? that tends to be the time when I join teams for some reason.
And then there's the obvious thing that you are working for Google, and it's a framework supported by Google, right? So, yes,
yeah.
That's a pretty easy choice. So, how's it going so far? Like, in terms of what comment on your experience with the features and so forth, and what have you really liked when using Angular, and then we'll move to the cons, I guess.
Yeah, so using Angular, it's been a bit of fun, really. There are some things to try to get your head around at first, but once you do, it does start to make a lot of sense, especially how things are built. And I find even the Angular code itself, if you go and read that, it's not too bad to figure out how things are working and what things are doing. I know people say background track because you can read it in a day. Angular might take you 2 days, but you can still do it. There's still parts of it that you can go in and realize what's happening and how things are working. So that's one of the things I like about it. It kind of works like magic in some places, and sometimes you can throw your hands up and say, why isn't this working? But that's only really on the first couple of days that you start using it. Afterwards, you kind of realize what some of the best practices are for it, and that'll keep you away from a lot of errors. Or even things just like when dealing with scope, you want to, instead of trying to use a single property on the scope all the way through, you want to actually have an object on the scope and then just deal with properties on that object. And that'll just use, and that'll keep you away from a lot of scope problems.
And what kind of problems have you seen, you know, by putting just a property directly on scope as opposed to an object with a property? I've definitely heard this before.
Yeah, so probably a big example is when you use a directive, it may create a... it may create a new scope that when you try and deal with this new scope. So basically, scopes in Angular work like prototypical inheritance in JavaScript. So if you created a prototype, or if you put a property on a prototype and you use this dot something equals in JavaScript, you won't overwrite the thing on the prototype. You'll overwrite the thing on the instance. And scopes are the same way. So if you get an inner scope and you try and overwrite the property, all you're doing is changing the property on that inner scope. It's not going to change the one on the outer scope. So, and you come across things like that with probably directors that you don't really expect to create new scopes. The things like the transclude, anything that you transclude, ng transclude creates a new scope that's a child. So if you've got anything within that, so if you, a lot of the times that you come across these are things like...
So people get scared by the word transclude. Can you break that down for us? It's rather simple as I remember when you actually learn it. But
transclude is very easy. It just means put whatever's on inside in the inside the element. So when you have a transcluded...
So there's no space-time continuum happening there or anything.
It's just, no, it's just something that fancy. Unfortunately, it'd be cool if it did.
So to be more. So if you have an existing DOM element and it has some content inside of it, it means leave that there as well as kind of append to it, or it means to help.
It basically takes that the child away, just put it in a temporary variable for the moment, and then it creates whatever the template is. It puts that template in its spot. And then it looks through that to find out the element that says ng transclude, and that's just a little mark that says put the content back in the spot.
Okay.
And that's all it is. And then it just means that everything in that template that you just put in also has its own scope. It's called an isolate scope because it doesn't have anything to do with any other scope around. It has its own properties, and then everything within that, the ng transclude that you put in, actually inherits the scope from before, so that everything that you put in there kind of works as you expect, except it's in a new scope that's inherited from the old one. So it just basically gives you another level down in the scopes. All your properties are there and you can get to them. But the thing is, if you're trying to apply to that, you're basically trying to apply on the instance rather than the prototype from the example before.
Yeah. That's a good explanation. Thanks. So what did you find confusing or problematic when you first started working with? You kind of touched on a few things already. But...
Yeah, as a lot of people said, the documentation isn't the best.
Right.
But that's...
It's kind of comical, though, sometimes, right? Like, what reading the comments underneath.
I find that, you know, about 50% of the time I go looking for an answer, the answer I'm looking for just isn't there.
Right.
And so you kind of try and figure it out for yourself. I guess if someone kind of wrote the documentation as they were trying to build an Angular app, it'd probably be better, because then they'd say, well, this is the kind of thing I want to know. Maybe I can go and add that into the documentation. Yeah, that was the hardest thing, trying to just figure things out to begin with.
What are the things you really like? Do you, the data binding is a common, you know, feature that's demoed. Does the gloss wear off on that after using it for a while, or do you?
Well, I mean, people also talk about two-way data binding and data binding. I mean, data binding, I find, is extremely useful. Two-way data binding, not so much.
Let's talk about the differences there. That's a interesting conversation I actually recently had with someone, and I'd like to rehab it here.
So. Two-way data binding just means that any changes you're making in the view will go and populate itself automatically onto the model, and then vice versa, and then anything on the model will come back. Just normal data binding means that whenever you change the model, view will update. If you update the view, it's not going to update the model. That's not really that big a problem, because then you could always just put on another directory and say, oh, and then when this changes on the view, go and update the model. You can just pop that on. So two-way data binding isn't a huge thing. It's mostly done through ng model, and it's only really done on inputs anyway, so it's not a big thing about it.
So in other words, yeah, most of the one-way data binding, when people talk about one-way data binding, they're usually talking about going from the model to the view, and that's the most useful thing that most people need when building an app. When there's an input, sometimes it's useful to have it go from the view back to the model automatically, but you're saving one line of code or whatever.
It's a bit of syntactic sugar. So, I mean, two-way data binding isn't as big a thing as people make it out to be. That's all it is. It just means that you've got an extra thing that'll go back and tell the model to change. Yeah, that's probably the only thing that I found that I still don't like too much about Angular, is that when you put things in the template, it happens like a scope.$watch. There's something on scope that's called watch.
Okay.
And then you pass it a function or something, and then it'll check to see if there's any changes. And it uses an equality comparison, unless you add in an optional parameter into that watch. So if you are watching a array and you change that with another array object, or even if you have an array and it's got things in it and you add things to it, it's not going to say that it's changed because the objects are the same, unless you put that true in. Now, that's fine. I don't mind that in the code. The problem is when you try and do things in the template, because there's no way to pass in that optional variable to watch, so everything's done on equality. And this is a problem when you're doing things like trying to, where if you have a function that filters an array, because if you return a filtered array, it's a different array. So every time it goes through the watch thing or it goes to check if it's different every time because it's a new array that you've got. I mean, you might have filtered it with the exact same elements, but it thinks it's different. And that's the worst thing that I've found, that you can't really tell it in the template, oh, the array is going to be different, but the element, but check the elements under the array. Don't just check the array to see if it's the same array.
Right.
And that's probably the worst thing of that, well, thing that I keep coming up against. And every time that comes up saying the watch statement's gone through too many cycles, then I know it's one of those somewhere around.
Right, right. Have you gotten into any of the browser plugins to use to help debug things?
No, I know there's better rankings, but not really. I found there's really been hardly any problems with it. I haven't found any big bugs that I've had to really, you know, go too far into to find out.
Okay. Let's see, where are we here? Let's talk about the architecture. You know, I think sometimes like frameworks like Backbone provide a lot around the model, whereas Angular prides itself in plain old JavaScript objects. Have you found, tell me about how you're organizing things in terms of, you know, services and factories and your actual model entities and how that's working in your application, how you guys have set that up?
We actually use, a lot of people here, we use something called protobufs. It's not JSON, it's different. So they're still objects that come through, but you have to actually call get something and set something on it. And we use a lot of those to do it. We find that just using those straight from the server, we can plug in whatever we need. The reason we use protobufs is that because you can use them in separate languages, in Java and so on, and then all you have to do is run whatever the protobuffer thing is, and it'll actually give you the class definitions for and how it should be, the class definitions in JavaScript, Java, and everywhere else that you want to put it. So it's very small over the wire as well, because it's all just done in arrays. There's no keys put in because the keys are put in the class definitions that are generated for each language. So we
is
use,
this a Google-specific thing or an open source
thing? It's an open source thing. So okay. Google use it a lot because it's small and fast. It's not as flexible as JSON because it has information on like types and so on. So it actually works well with stuff like closure tools because the types are already there and you can use it.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's an open source thing that you can go and use it. The difference is not as flexible because you've got all these type considerations and so on. But the great thing is that you can use it with a Java backend and it'll be the same thing going between them.
Right. That's interesting. That's interesting. So obviously you guys are using Java on the back end to fill that. Databases.
I don't actually. I think it's a proprietary thing. What they're doing on the database, they got. I think they use Bigtable. I think it's the Java, the Google thing they use to store it. But they've got stuff on top of that to store it in different ways and do everything it needs to.
Okay. We're here at CodeMash. I didn't mention, and so we've got some people coming in and out of the area. So. Don't mind that. That covers a lot. I'm trying to think of maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, what you're using. You know, are you using an IDE or using a text editor, Vim? You know, what's your world like there?
You basically have to use anything you want there. So I use Sublime Text personally.
Okay. The Sublime Text, and then they're okay with it. In terms of building the client side stuff, are you guys using Yeoman or Grunt or Bower, you know, any of that?
No, we've got a Google build system, so they've got their own stuff that they do to build things.
So that makes sense. Require JS or any AMD type stuff going on for modularity?
Closure Tools is its own thing for that.
It
works basically on namespaces. There is. Yeah, so basically all you have to do is you set up your files, and then at the top of it you say goog dot, what is it? I forgot the word for it now. goog dot provide. So you do goog dot provide, you say what namespace you're exporting from that file, and anything you need underneath it, you say goog dot require, and you just put that namespace in. And then what they have is a runner that goes through, looks at all your files, figures out the graph of how things are dependent, and then just kind of adds them in together.
Okay.
And that's all you really need to get into your work.
So had you used Clojure quite a bit before this on other projects and so forth? Because it sounds like it's a big part of the, you know, the picture here.
I did. So there was a company I worked at called Catch back in San Francisco.
Okay.
And that's where I got introduced to Clojure. They were using just plain Clojure to build their system.
Great. Anything else you think listeners or front-end developers would be interested in hearing about the project that I haven't asked? think of? We covered everything. But what about authentication in your application?
I think that's still dealt with by the GWT section. So at the moment, we're trying to replace a single pages within that application as we go. So yeah, because it all runs in routes and so on, all we have to do is say in the original application for this route, now open up this Angular application, this page with Angular on it. Because Angular is basically, it's a library, you can just say, okay, add in the Angular thing and it will run as it needs to. You don't have to go in and throw away your old application, that's the wrapper for it.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. Well, thanks for being on the podcast today, Reese. I really appreciate it, and I think the listeners will get a lot from this. I like hearing about what's happening in the real world, especially inside Google. I'm quite intrigued. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Frontend Developer Podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast by going to the iTunes store on your phone or desktop, then searching for Frontend, or via RSS by going to frontendcast.com, where you'll also find show notes and a full transcript of each episode. We'll see you next time.